You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 10th of January 2016 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, we're looking ahead to the UBS Greater China Conference, the leading financial forum exploring the big ideas, trends and challenges shaping China in the year and years ahead. Now, in its 16th year, the event will explore everything from the country's capital account liberalisation and reforms to its developing role in Asia and the potential impact of innovative technologies. We'll also be previewing the UBS Climate Change Report, which will be debuting at the GCC. All that is ahead then, but we start with Tao Wang, the chief China economist at UBS, who introduces the Greater China Conference.
The conference, our Greater China Conference, is a conference for clients who are invested in the Greater China area. So we usually have close to 2,000 people attending, and so we bring investors, fund managers, on one hand, and on the other hand, the corporate together, so basically shareholders and the corporates together, and we will look at the outlook for Chinese economy, we'll look at structural reform, China's financial liberalization, we'll look at also the new industries, internet, you know, what's happening in the environmental policy area, the new industries, and so on. So a lot of interesting topics.
Ahead of the GCC, it's a good opportunity to get an overview for 2016 in terms of the key macro and micro considerations. Ting Gao is head of China strategy at UBS Securities in China.
First of all, we're going to see a further slowdown in the economy and also corporate earnings. That's the first thing. That's the background I think we'll be seeing next year. And second thing, I think very importantly, is divergence in terms of different sectors. And I think part of that is mostly driven by sort of the structural changes in China. So I think next year or maybe next 2 or 3 years, structural change and winners and losers as a result of those are very important in terms of investment thinking. Third, I think the risk part we watch very closely about credit defaults. I think the debt level is pretty high in China. As the economy further slows, I think that there's rising risk that there's further default that may potentially shock the financial system.
And what does Tao Wang make of the key macro themes when it comes to sound strategic planning for the year ahead? Growth and reforms are front and centre.
For 2016, we are looking for the Chinese economy to continue to grind slower, and we're looking for 6.2% growth, and that is partly because of a continued adjustment and slowdown in property construction and therefore in the heavy industry and mining sector. But at the same time, we're looking for structural reforms to pick up. So we see retirement of excess capacity, we see more policy support on fiscal and monetary front, and faster hukou and urbanization reform, and so on.
What's certainly true at the start of 2016 is that equity markets have been dominating coverage. So what's the outlook here? Ting again.
For the next 12 months, we're actually quite neutral for 2 or 3 different reasons. One is that we have a weak economy this year. I think growth will further slow down. And as a result, earning growth will be weak as well. We're actually looking at about negative 1% growth for earnings of the listed companies. This is for the first time in many years that we have a negative growth. So that's part of the story, earnings side. Valuation, we still have a lot of liquidity. Central bank is still in the easing cycle. So we do expect further monetary easing and loose monetary conditions. That tend to support valuation. So I think that valuation at this point, for example, we look at the main index, the CSI 300, trading at around 13 times. Is fair. I think should be able to support it by the current liquidity conditions.
Up next, we'll look in a little more detail at China's reform agenda. When it comes to reforms, what will be the views shared at the GCC? What realistic progress should we expect this year? Well, it's a question that affects everything, macro and micro, as Tao Wong explains.
What we think will be the most important reform is perhaps the state-owned enterprise reform. The SOE reform, well, people talked about consolidation and mergers and acquisition. I think a key part is actually to clear out the zombie companies and allow SOEs to exit from some sectors and allow for bankruptcies. So there will be restructuring. We think the speed of restructuring will pick up this year. And there will be pain associated with it, but that also means the, you know, the beginning of a new, you know, new outlook going forward.
When discussing the reform agenda and reshaping the balance of China's economy, how much of a focus is this for Ting Yao and his colleagues?
I think it's very important. I think in the last couple of months, obviously you see more rhetoric from government officials. What's happening now is we do have structural shifts, but those come up naturally as a result of market condition change and so on. So we see more consumption, less investment. The government is trying to facilitate the change, speed up the transformation of the economy. A very big part of that is actually about SOE, state-owned enterprises. Those are state companies that command sort of better access to credit and other resources. So and a lot of them are loss-making, especially in some troubled sectors such as cement, coal, and so on. And these sectors are struggling as a result of weak demand and overcapacity. So I think it's going to be a tough job. The government is talking about it. It's talking about dealing with sort of overcapacity and trying to force close down. And they've been talking about zombie companies and shutting them down and all that. I think it's a fine balance here. If you attack overcapacity forcefully, that may cause sort of more drastic slowdown in overall growth. I'm not sure what the balance the government is looking for. At least from all indications we see, they're still looking for around 6.5% growth as a target for this year.
Now, whilst much of the coverage at the year's start has focused on stock market volatility, there are questions too regarding China's currency. Here's Tao Wang again.
I think that China is moving away from a fixed exchange rate against the U.S. dollar, and I think the market is not very used to that shift. So, once the Chinese currency start to move, international standards, even though it's a small move, I think people get very anxious, as you know, it's new, right? And so there's always concerns about if this is really reflecting a bigger macro problem at home. Is China running out of liquidity? Is China running out of foreign exchange reserves? I think a lot of the fears are quite exaggerated, but it is very high on people's mind, this currency issue. We expect the CNY to depreciate by about 5% against the dollar, which is really nothing in a very volatile, you know, currency exchange rate environment globally. But for the Chinese, I think for people who watch China, that still seem to be a significant number. And also the concern is whether China can contain it.
So actually, is currency a bigger worry than stock market volatility for many analysts? What does Ting think?
I think there's a tendency that the PBOC, the central bank, is gradually moving away from the pact with the U.S. dollar. So they're talking about this basket of currencies. I think that there's a shift here, but I think it's going to be a very slow, gradual process. In the meantime, they still want to sort of keep the rate relatively steady against the U.S. dollar. I think the main concern here is if you have this sharp depreciation that can cause potentially large capital outflows, which is counterproductive as far as the monetary policy goal is concerned, because they want to keep liquidity loose in the domestic system, keep monetary condition relatively loose to support growth. If you see large capital outflows, then it's going to offset that. So I think central bank will still manage that sort of depreciation in a very careful way. So we do see some depreciation next year or the next 12 months. Our target is 6.8 Chinese yuan against dollar. Right now we're sitting at 6.5 or so.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we consider the role of innovation in finance and industry. Plus, we'll preview the new UBS Climate Change Report, which is to debut at the GCC. Critical areas of discussion in China this week will involve innovation and new industry. We asked Tao Wang what the most compelling reasons are to look at this space in more detail.
I think there are probably two things. One is that China presents a huge potential, right? A huge market for these new technologies and new industries to experiment and to grow. The second thing, I think, is that for the government who tried to rebalance China's economy, moving from the old traditional sectors to the new sectors, they're also fostering some of these reforms in terms of lowering the entry barrier, bringing more competition.
We take a step further back now and look at the bigger picture in terms of geopolitics and so on. When it comes to China's place in Asia, and indeed its role in the wider world, how might things change in the year ahead? Here's Tao Wang again.
China has become the second largest economy in the world, and China wants to play a bigger role in global economy and financial system. So it will continue to, I think, to go out. So the One Belt, One Road initiative is part of that going out strategy. China's joining of the currency joining the SDR in the IMF is another. And recently, China's quota got increased in the IMF as well. So to play a bigger part, bigger role within the global structure is definitely something China is striving for. You have the Asia Infrastructure Investment Bank being established, the Silk Road Funds, and so on. So within Asia, I think a lot of China's neighbors will see perhaps more investment, more funding coming through from China. So that could be very interesting opportunities in some of these economies.
Tao Wang. Finally, on today's programme, we hear from our regular contributor, UBS Global Economist Paul Donovan. We'll get more from Paul on next week's show as he talks us through the findings and function of a new UBS report examining climate change. This week, though, we asked Paul, why launch the climate change report at the Greater China Conference?
Well, China's presidency of the G20 group this year is putting quite a lot of emphasis on environmental issues and environmental growth, including, of course, issues around environmental finance. China itself is at risk from climate change. Its water use is a huge problem. Several of its cities are vulnerable to climate change. And then, of course, there are additional issues like pollution and so on, which are affecting the overall climate. So for us, China is a key part of the debate around climate and climate change, and I think may well be taking quite a leading role this year through the G20 chairing.
Speaking of China, and of course the US, in terms of the climate change agenda, is it all about them? Or is it something of an oversimplification to suggest that these two superpowers hold the key to solving this issue between them?
I think there's a certain amount of truth. If you look at demand for non-renewable resources, for example, if you look at some of the issues around pollution, it does tend to focus on those two economies, simply because they're very large economies. And obviously large economies produce large amounts of external problems as a result of their economic activity. Nonetheless, I think that it goes beyond just looking at these two economies, which is one of the key issues, I think, in trying to understand where policy and environmental issues are likely to go. That if you have a country or a region that is being significantly affected by climate change, that country is likely to try and tackle the problem through policy initiatives, and then from that through innovation in order to find ways to become more environmentally efficient. So that means that from a financial markets perspective and from an economic perspective, looking at the countries that are perhaps causing some of the climate change is not just what we have to do. We also have to look at those countries that are seeking to tackle it, because that's where the solutions lie, and that's where perhaps some of the investment opportunities lie as well.
And that's Paul Donovan, bringing us to the end of this 66th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week, here on Monocle 24. Hear more from Paul on the detail of the UBS climate change study on next week's programme, which you can catch as ever, at monocle.com via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.